Well, hello, friends. It has been a while since I've been able to attend to these esoteric astrology adventures. Actually, slightly more than 6 months, unfortunately. And as well, even before that, I had a bit of a spurt there, working in the area of Scorpio, I think. But preceding that February presentation, it had also been a while. So it's now my hope to begin working here in a way that's a little bit more systematic, because I would like to discuss with you the thoughts that come to my mind while working, while looking at the Tibetans, as he called it, his most occult text, esoteric astrology, because it dealt fundamentally with energy in its purest form. We concluded, actually, on the 18th of February, this year, 2012, on page 209, we were in the Scorpio chapter. It says, "We come now to a consideration of the rulers which govern the sign Scorpio." And as we realize, when we're talking about a sign, we might as well be talking about the energies which begin with the solar logoi gathered into the constellation Scorpio, or as it is perhaps more precisely called, Scorpius. The signs are concentrated influences of the energies which emanate from the constellations themselves. Their influence is potent in the lives of the average or undeveloped man who responds more easily to the planetary influences in the 12 houses of his personality horoscope than does the average, than does the more advanced man who is coming under the direct influence of the zodiacal signs. Sometimes, as in a treatise on white magic in the astrology chapter, a very lengthy one, he talks about the influence of the zodiacal signs operating below the diaphragm. Sometimes he relates them to soul influence, and there are other times when he relates them to monadic influence. So everything depends upon the context. We have here, as rulers in Scorpio, Mars, Pluto, and Mercury. And Mars and Pluto are non-sacred planets. Their planetary logos has not yet achieved his fifth initiation. I suppose that is in a scheme sense. And therefore, these planets are placed within the houses, particularly as rulers of the personality horoscope. Of course, the suggestion is here that there may well be a soul horoscope. But what its form is exactly, we are still in process of working out. Some have called it the charts of the crosses, but that does not seem quite adequate because the soul horoscope is something more lasting than any horoscope derived from the time of birth of a particular incarnation. In any case, DK is telling us that the more advanced man is coming under the influence of the direct influence of the zodiacal signs. Of course, we also realize that many average individuals also come under the zodiacal signs, but perhaps he's hinting, he may be hinting here that the influence of the zodiacal signs comes to the non-advanced individual through the planets. Perhaps he's saying that, rather than a direct influence. Through these rulers, two rays are brought into potent controlling position in Scorpio. They are the sixth ray of devotion and the fourth ray of harmony through conflict. So he's really only mentioning at first Mars, with its rulership being the sixth ray, probably on the personality level, and the fourth ray of harmony through conflict, that is the ruler of Scorpio, which is the ruler of Mercury, which is the hierarchical ruler. The latter having a peculiar relation to the mode of human development, and the former to the methods of the Piscean Age, which is just passing. So the Piscean Age has been an age of devotion. The two rays of Pisces, we know, rays 2 and 6. So it's been a strongly devotional age. And interestingly, Scorpio is the sign, in a way, most associated with humanity. The hierarchy of human monads is ruled by the fourth ray and by Mercury. I'll show you an example here. Yes, here it is. Okay, and you know, you've seen this, I know, but it's, well, maybe it's worthwhile getting myself back in the groove. But here's the human hierarchy, the initiates, the lords of sacrifices, the hierarchy of human monads found on Esoteric Astrology, page 35, and you see that Scorpio is its sign, and the planet is Mercury, and interestingly, the mental intuitive color yellow, also a fourth-ray color, is its particular color. So, okay. So the two rays are particularly ray 6 and ray 4, and they are reinforced in various ways. Christianity, which was a religion very characteristic in the West of the Age of Pisces, is a Scorpionic sixth ray religion. So we can see that in the Piscean Age, what a powerful expression of the sixth ray we have been experiencing. And in general, this method of harmony through conflict, of always having to fight, and eventually, as a result of the battles and combat, achieving the necessary harmony. It's interesting that the United Nations, I think, was founded on October 24th. It is in Scorpio. It's a fourth-ray organization in many respects. And its purpose has been to achieve harmony out of the many conflicts which have been occurring between member nations. So let's see here. The latter having a peculiar relation to the mode of human development, and the former to the methods of the Piscean Age just passing. So we've seen a great deal of conflict during the Piscean Age due to the connection with Scorpio and with Christianity as a Scorpionic religion. And there have been other religions, of course, important. He's talked about Buddhism actually being found perhaps on the second subray of the sixth ray in general, and certainly Islam is found upon the sixth ray. We have some extraordinarily conflict-prone religions during the Piscean Age, and the zeal with which the members of these faiths have battled with each other is characteristic of Mars, the ruler of Scorpio, on two levels. Mars and Mercury control, and Mars is particularly active. Now, Interestingly, this was written just before the Second World War began, and by the time the Second World War had concluded, Mars had reached the acme of its conflicted cycle for this particular period of time, immediately after the war. Its control upon the astral plane was most intense and apparently has been subsiding ever since, even though we have a world still filled with Martian conflict, Martian activity. So Mars and Mercury control, and Mars is particularly active owing to the fact that Mars is both the orthodox planet controlling the personality in Scorpio and also the esoteric planet. How can a planet be both orthodox and esoteric? There are different qualities which can be conveyed by a particular planet in different areas of application. It's still the same planet, but of course, people at different stages of evolution respond to the planet in different ways. So, if I am a relatively advanced individual born in or under Scorpio, I may respond in quite a higher way, a more internal way. I may not exteriorize in all my conflicts and project the enemy upon the other. I will know, in fact, that the enemy is within, and I will undertake an internal battle. Actually, in reference to the idea of jihad, I have understood that the external jihad, the evidences of which we see so prominent in the world today, is but phase one. A more important type of jihad is the battle of the higher aspect of the individual over his lower nature, and that I think will have to be increasingly realized, just as it has been, I think, in Christianity. So Mars is both the orthodox planet controlling the personality and also the esoteric planet conditioning the unfoldment of the disciple. It is a battle to be a disciple and many other conflicts. In one of his prominent exhortations, the Tibetan spoke about the period of struggle in which we were now engaged, and he said to all of his disciples in his group, he said, "See that you battle." So this is both within and upon the world stage, attempting, I think, to transform the customary sense of victory over the opponent into victory on behalf of both oneself and the opponent, a kind of a win-win situation. This is more characteristic of the fourth ray. So Mars is both the orthodox planet controlling the personality in Scorpio and also conditions the esoteric development of the disciple. Mars is the dominating factor in the tests and trials of the disciple prior to the experience in Sagittarius and the initiation in Capricorn. And this for three reasons. Well, now it has to be said that there are tests and trials of a peculiar kind for all the first three initiations. The experience in Sagittarius is manifold, and Sagittarius rules, among other things, initiates of the first and second degree. So we have Scorpio involved in the progress of initiates of the first, second, and third degree, and Sagittarius involved in the progress of initiates of the first and second degree. Perhaps there's a higher aspect of Sagittarius which is leading through vision to the third degree, but then Scorpio can be involved there as well, and Capricorn can be considered involved with the first three initiations, including, of course, the birth of the Christ in the heart, the celebrated birth of Jesus at the time of Christmas occurred in the Capricorn period. So it's not quite so simple as the Tibetan seems to indicate right here, because in other places he expands the idea. But anyway, before the vision can be clarified in Sagittarius, there are many battles with oneself which one must overcome. Initiation in Capricorn is most characteristically represented by the third degree, at least when disciples study esoteric astrology, but we have to remember that the birth in Bethlehem is actually a Capricornian solstitial experience. It is the winter solstice in the north. So there's always going to be an opponent, something, someone, some factor with which to contend, and Mars is the contending planet. I don't see any reason why the experience in Scorpio should not also be taken to the fourth initiation, but at that point, I think it is no longer Mars that is really representing the Scorpio experience, but rather the clarification of consciousness and the dispelling of illusion, which are represented by Mercury. Although there are many struggles with people of a Martian nature, I would say, that the disciple will experience at the time of the fourth initiation. In a way, he has to face the Martian attitude of humanity, but not face it with armed with the usual armamentarium of Mars, but a different sort of weapon is to be used, and these are weapons of consciousness. Okay, so anyway, Mars is the dominating factor in the tests and trials of the disciple prior to the experience in Sagittarius. Now, you know, he's being very specific about the experience in Sagittarius, because if we think about it, I think he's localizing a certain point on the path particularly. Scorpio is most associated with the second initiation, although it's involved in the first and third as well. Sagittarius is involved with the first and second initiation, but in a way through its vision of higher possibilities prepares the way for the third degree, with which Capricorn is most fully or most commonly associated. First, Mars is definitely the planet which rules and controls the physical vehicle. I think this is a very important statement. It is not only the physical vehicle which Mars controls, but I think, you know, you see interestingly in the lives of prominent athletes a prominent Mars, and they are those who are subjecting particularly the physical etheric vehicle to their will. They are forcing it to perform extreme feats, extreme by the standards of most people. And the prominent Mars, especially, let's say, Mars near the midheaven, maybe, interestingly, according to the Gokulan research, somewhat on the ninth house side, and Mars somewhat on the 12th house side of the ascendant, are correlated with excellence in athletics. Now, Mars is found on all levels of the all levels of the personality. It doesn't really rule the etheric vehicle so much, but it does rule the astral. It rules the lower mental. And it rules all of them together, the united threefold personality, united into one. So Mars is the representative of that personality, and the Moon, interestingly, of all the non-sacred planets, has the closest connection to the outer, densest vehicle, which in many ways is a leftover from moonchain and first solar system activity. Mars and the Moon, therefore, rule, in a way, the profane elements of man, those that stand outside the fence or the wall or the enclosure of the inner temple. It is in many respects a physical planet, and here we have its color red, one of the rougher shades of red being extremely physical, and the color of blood. So Mars is definitely, he says, the planet which rules and controls the physical vehicle. Mars appears first of all as the orthodox ruler in Aries, the sign in which the first move, that's such an important statement somehow, those words, first move, it's so Martian, is made towards bringing about objective manifestation or physical incarnation. So man, in a way, is really an idea. Aries is the birthplace of ideas, and Mars represents the descent from the mental plane of that idea towards incarnation in the dense physical vehicle, which is a realm ruled by Cancer and the Moon, particularly. Just checking that all of these are working correctly. Okay. So there is a greater degree of outwardness, of superficiality of experience upon the surface, represented by Aries. It's a more external expression of Mars, generally speaking. And I come forth, and from the plane of mind I rule, is the Aries mantra. And Aries represents a movement from the plane of mind to the plane of emotions, Taurus, to the plane of ether, Gemini, and finally into the plane of dense physical incarnation, Cancer, even though the etheric physical is one. You kind of wonder then, if the etheric physical is one and it's ruled by two signs, the mental plane is also a two, which is a one, and is it ruled by two signs as well? Does Aries rule in both cases, or does another sign rule the higher mental plane rather than Aries particularly? So anyway, this is the sign in which the first move is made towards bringing about objective manifestation or physical incarnation. Mars will take the initiative in reflection of that greater lord of the constellation, Aries, to whom it is so closely related. In Scorpio, also ruled by Mars, we're differentiating here, the result of all the struggles carried forward during the seemingly endless pilgrimage around the zodiac or wheel of life is brought to a point of climax. This is the thing, such dire and dreadful and noticeable experiences full of what we call suffering are found in the sign Scorpio. The idea of the climax suggests the mountaintop, the summit. There's a kind of climactic activity going on with Scorpio, but also in an even higher way with Capricorn. Seemingly endless, well, how endless is 21 million years? How endless is 25 million years? Not endless, but from the perspective of the way we regard time, the Tibetan tells us seemingly endless. So in Scorpio, the result of all the struggles carried forward during the seemingly endless pilgrimage, that's what the Jiva is involved in. The Jiva is the monad in extension, engaged in a pilgrimage around the zodiac, or wheel of life. And a point of climax is reached, again through the activity of Mars, which has not appeared actively in the intervening signs between Aries and Scorpio. So to appear actively means, in a way, to be a ruler of a sign. We want to see how the Tibetan thinks here. To appear actively is to be a ruler of a sign. and in no instance, whether orthodoxly or esoterically, has Mars appeared between Aries and Scorpio. It appears again hierarchically in Sagittarius, as we have discussed. So it has not appeared actively in the intervening signs between Aries and Scorpio as far as the reverse wheel is concerned. As far as the clockwise wheel is concerned, if we were moving in that direction, then Sagittarius would come before Scorpio, because we'd be moving in an order which is apparently backwards from the way we usually consider the signs, and then Mars would have appeared between Aries and Scorpio in Sagittarius, moving on the clockwise wheel. But the Tibetan here is talking about the ordinary method of movement. So the battles of discipleship, the trials, the presentation of opportunity, usually a Saturnian consideration, but also Martian in relation to Scorpio, these emerge in the life of the disciple who is conditioned by Scorpio. Scorpio is maybe the preeminent sign of discipleship, just as Capricorn is the preeminent sign of initiation. In many ways, until one takes the third initiation, one is still considered a disciple. From the time one takes the third initiation, one is considered technically an initiate. The disciple has now to demonstrate the strength, character, and quality which he has unfolded and developed within himself during his long pilgrimage. And there's that word, demonstrate. To show forth upon the dense physical plane, to show forth through matter. We realize that Scorpio is one of the triple signs. Being triple, and being an M, it represents matter, an expression through matter, just as Virgo, another M sign, does. Scorpio, in a way, is a more masculine sign, but still it's feminine because it represents the heat of the mother. Virgo is also almost always considered a feminine sign, although its mantra does include God, who is the Father, interestingly enough. So the disciple has now to demonstrate strength. This is, after all, the sign of Hercules, the great first-ray soul who knows what his monad is. Character, which means not losing one's integrity under pressure, but sustaining all of the good structures which have been built in, and quality, which is of the soul. He has to demonstrate these despite opposition. And the opposition will come from his own nature, and it will come from the environment as well. So he started in Aries with Mars ruling, and the great war between the dualities which constitute the man began. The pairs of opposites were brought into relation with each other. Well, this can be considered to be spirit and matter in one sense, and Aries with its first and seventh ray expressions can be considered the sign in which spirit and matter are brought into opposition with each other. Whoop, don't have this on. I hope it's been somewhat recording. I was saying that spirit and matter are brought into opposition with each other, but also soul and personality. Not immediately, of course, because it's a long time before the man realizes that he is actually a soul, or that the soul becomes a factor that enters into his normal experience. In Scorpio, with the same planet ruling his interior life, the war is on, and in this case Mars refers not only to the physical body, but the entire form vehicle. So there, the Tibetan is expanding the meaning of Mars, the entire form vehicle, and the interior life of the individual is particularly the concern of the disciple. So Mars represents here, he says, that which we call the personality in the three worlds. Mars is that as well as all aspects of the personality. Now, I suppose Scorpio is the sign in which the average person will have many extreme experiences. And the outwardly, exteriorly oriented individual, because that represents a phase of life, exteriorizing the consciousness, will also have Martian experiences which are not necessarily having to do with the interior life. So I think the Tibetan is talking about later, when the individual has become the disciple, and an internal war is on, and there is a battle going on between the factor we call the higher consciousness, the soul, and the entire personality. Eventually, the personality itself becomes the entire dweller on the threshold, and this is a way in which Scorpio can be considered to be involved with the fourth initiation, the entire dweller on the threshold is represented by Mars, but also that aspect of humanity which is dweller-like, because the initiate of the fourth degree, becoming the fourth degree, is not usually presented with the more pleasant aspects of humanity, but with the threefold personality united of humanity, which seeks to eject the initiate out of the human kingdom. So anyway, DK seems to tell us that Aries is the more external sign, Scorpio ruling interiors. But of course, we have undeveloped Scorpio people and highly developed Aries people. So, as always, the stage of evolution has to be understood. Anyway, the personality is involved here, not just the physical body. All aspects of the lower nature are involved in this crisis. For Mars is the esoteric ruler in Scorpio. Yes, he is speaking about that phase particularly. And the tests supplied involve the form nature, gross and subtle, the subtle bodies, astral body, mental body, etheric body too, I suppose. The form nature integrated and potent. So this is the entire personality integrated and potent. Mars, therefore, rules Aries from the orthodox angle and Scorpio esoterically, but remember here, of course, it also rules Scorpio exoterically. But the more exoteric expression, I think, is found in relation to Aries, the more esoteric expression in relation to Scorpio. So Mars therefore rules Aries from the orthodox angle and Scorpio esoterically, and does not again appear in the life of the individual except as that individual responds to mass vibration in Sagittarius. In other words, those who respond to the lunar lords. If average man responds the lunar lords, he is responding to a mass vibration of Mars. And again, you can see that here, the lunar lords, which comprise the personality of the man, are all ruled by Sagittarius and by the planet Mars. But since they are, of course, what we call lunar lords, they are also closely connected with the ancient thought form effect of the moon. So Mars does not appear again. Again appear in the life of the individual, except as that individual responds to mass vibration in Sagittarius, which of course he does. The response of humanity to the four lunar lords, the fourfold square constituting his personality, is profound. So, where Mars appears again as ruling the sixth and unconscious creative hierarchy, the lunar lords of the form nature who must eventually be sacrificed to the higher spiritual aspect and brought under the control of the solar angel. Interestingly enough, that sacrifice upon the altar, or Ara, which is associated, associated with the second decan of Sagittarius. In The Labors of Hercules, Alice Bailey gives the connection of various extra or non-zodiacal constellations to the constellations themselves, and seems pretty clear that with the second decanate of Sagittarius relating to the planet Mars, the fiery altar, which is going to consume the lunar lords of the lunar nature, is that constellation which is to be associated with the Martian decanate. So the lunar lords of the form nature who must eventually be sacrificed to the higher spiritual aspect and brought under the control of the solar angel. In this case, the solar angel is the higher spiritual aspect, and all of the usual desires must be elevated into aspirations toward the solar angelic life. And thus the lunar lords are made sacred, and the elementals are on their way to becoming Devic. So the effect of Mars is therefore largely mass effect and group results, producing great struggles, leading to great revelation. So when the dust settles and the smoke clears, the light enters. And when the heat of fire by friction subsides, then comes the light. And we have fulfilled the ancient idea, more light and less heat. So it seems that we human beings somehow have to struggle for the revelations which are to be ours. Perhaps our struggle via fire by friction has an elevating effect upon the lower forms of matter form in which we are immersed for redemptive purposes. So prior to the disciples' use of Mars to fight the good fight in an inner sense, making it possible for the soul to conquer the tendencies of the personality, the effect of Mars is a mass effect and involves many people, and contributes greatly to the struggles which have been characteristic of our battling humanity over millions of years. After all, Mars is a planetary scheme intimately associated with our Earth, and the overcoming of the influence of Mars upon our planet is a great objective. At the same time, Mars has provided a kind of incentive, a kind of fiery energy, which has been very important in bringing about the elevation of the human consciousness and its conquest over the lower forces which would hold it in prison. Mars is, in many ways, a breakout and breakthrough energy. And it fights its way into the clear. That suggests the clarity of consciousness, fights its way towards clarification of consciousness, which is most unclear when man is entirely subjected to lunar rhythms of the lower forms of matter. In Aries, it is the final revelation of the nature of knowledge and the purpose of incarnation. Aries is a sign associated with the mind. It also has a Mercury component to it, Aries does. Interestingly, so does Scorpio. Matter of fact, Scorpio rules in an even higher way. Rather, Mercury rules in an even higher way in Scorpio than it does in Aries. So battle and knowledge are both involved in both of these signs. So Aries somehow brings us towards the revelation of mind, and eventually, I think, towards the revelation of the divine mind and the purpose of incarnation. Now, if we look over here, and we go into this, we go to page 332 of Esoteric Astrology, we see that Aries confers the recognition and work with the plan and also will. These two factors are touching upon the realm of purpose. Aries is a sign much associated with divine archetype. And I'm going to make this a little bigger so it's more possible to see. And let's see. There it is. Recognition and work with the plan, will. So purpose is related to pattern. Pattern is the nature of archetype. Uranus is the highest ruler in Aries and brings forth the purposeful archetype which must be fulfilled. Now, of course, we can begin with the purpose of an incarnation, which is a small factor, or we can go as far as monadic purpose, also closely related to Uranus and to Aries, as Aries of the three fire signs is the one most associated with the monad. So in Aries, it is the final revelation of the nature of knowledge. It doesn't necessarily say it will be knowledge per se, but the nature of knowledge and what it is for and the purpose of incarnation. In Scorpio, we're talking about revelations which come in these two signs. In Scorpio, it is the revelation of the vision of liberation and service. Now, this is going to be fulfilled somewhat in Sagittarius. So after this great internal battle, a new vision presents itself. The possibility of liberation exists because Uranus, the planet of liberation, so powerful in Aries, is also the exalted planet in Scorpio. Isn't that interesting? Three planets found in both of these signs, Mars, Mercury, and Scorpio. And Pluto is prominent in Scorpio, but let's also remember the triangle Aries-Pluto-Shambhala, showing that this first-rate planet Pluto has an interesting connection with Aries as well, and with the center of will. I realize I'm a little bit in the dark here. I have to lean forward in order to be seen, but as the as it becomes darker at night, perhaps my image will emerge a little bit. Okay, so revelation emerges here as a result of these conflicts. And in Aries, it is the final revelation. That sounds like it's quite ultimate. You know, when you look at Mercury, it is a planet of mind and of knowledge. But Uranus, the higher octave of Mercury, is also, in one of its aspects, a planet of mind and of knowledge as well. So what really is knowledge? Perhaps we will find this out through our struggles in Aries and the purpose of the incarnation. Notice when you look at a horoscope and you look at the first house of the horoscope, it belongs, in a way, to Aries. You can have any sign rising, but the first house of the horoscope and the ascendant are Arician in nature. And it is there that the particular purpose of an incarnation from the soul perspective is presented. The particular sign, the particular decanate, the particular dwadashamsa, the particular degree with their meanings, all of these will present something important about this seed of purpose, which is meant to be unfolded as a pattern in lower matter through the processes of an incarnation. In Scorpio, it is the revelation of the vision of liberation and service. So Scorpio, in a way, rules the first law of the soul, the law of sacrifice, since it is that constellation which brings in at this time more fourth ray than any other, and the law of sacrifice being a fourth ray law. So the vision of how one can sacrifice one's lower nature, bring it to the altar, lay it down in service, lay the lower nature down in service, this vision is presented after the smoke clears. The revelation that we get through the struggles of Mars in Sagittarius is the revelation of the purpose of soul control over the lower kingdoms in nature via the human energy center. Revelation of the purpose of soul control. What is it that will be achieved in the larger sense and as revealed by the larger vision when the soul does indeed apply magnetic control, the fourth systemic law, over the lower kingdoms in nature, the lunar lords, the lower kingdoms, and the kingdoms in which the lunar lords rule. They have a much a stronger grip upon the lower kingdoms than they are meant to have over humanity. So Sagittarius is a sign of generalship, of one-pointed control. And the purpose of the struggles we go through in order to achieve soul control is revealed through this sign. This is another sign that guides us on our way home toward the monad. It has this very strong homing instinct, a sign of high idealism. And if we follow, it is said, our sense of smell toward its ultimate destination, it will lead us to the spirit, to the sixth plane, where this, in relation to which this sense, the sense of smell, is strongly connected. So three revelations come: the nature of knowledge and the purpose of the incarnation. That's in Aries. In Scorpio, the revelation of the vision of liberation, the possibility of being free through Mercury and through Uranus, the one the higher octave of the other, and sacrificial service. And in Sagittarius, the larger picture, why must the lunar lords be subdued? And what will their subduing lead to in the longer term? In other words, it's the fourth kingdom of nature which must subdue the lower kingdoms for which the fourth kingdom stands as the macrocosm. And there are three lunar lords particularly, which must be subdued, and a fourth, the lunar lord, which is the combination of the lower three, it must be subdued. Interestingly, Sagittarius has the fourth ray working through it, and so can be connected with the fourth systemic law, the law of magnetic control, which does speak to the way that the soul magnetically controls its lower instrument. It must consequently never be forgotten that Mars establishes relations between the opposites and is a beneficent and not a malefic factor, as is so often supposed. I think DK is trying to put the astrological factors in their true perspective. You know how it is when we think of the pleasures of the personality, we run into these Martian and Saturnian experiences, and perhaps we wish we could avoid the frictional heat and the austere cold of the frictional heat of Mars and the austere cold of Saturn, but they are all benefic influences for the emergence of soul control. So Mars brings on engagement between the opposites, whatever these opposites may be. How shall the opposites get to know each other and thus harmonize with each other and thus eventually become unified with each other, except through the processes of frictional engagement? So between spirit and matter in the larger sense and between soul and personality in a lesser sense, Mars is involved. And perhaps we sometimes consider mind and feeling to be opposites, and Mars may be involved in this type of engagement as well. There are many factors to be adjusted when it comes to a consideration of what esoteric astrology really is. And this book, written 80 years ago, almost, tries to signal to us a new perspective which we could overlook entirely if we remain content with conventional presentations. When we come to study the hierarchies and their relation to the signs, certain points which are at present obscure will be clarified. Well, we've been doing that to a degree, and even when we began this series back almost 2 years ago, it seems, we were looking at the earlier part of the book and the study of the creative hierarchies, but later as well, in the latter part of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, there is much study to be undertaken. But pretty well, all that has been given in Cosmic Fire on this subject has been exported into the astrology book. So we're learning how to deal with large groupings of lives, the various creative hierarchies, and how the initiate regards these groupings, how he relates to these groupings, because when dealing with these groupings, it is the initiate consciousness, really, that is required if there is to be control, and if the human being is not to be controlled by them, especially the lower ones. So he says, this we shall do, clarification, when dealing with our final points in this section upon astrology and the rays. We shall then find that Scorpio rules and governs the fourth creative hierarchy. This is what I was saying, that we human beings, as a monadic grouping, are a warring grouping. Conflict is inseparable from what we are, and in many ways, since it is our function to bring relation between the pairs of opposites, between the higher kingdoms and the lower kingdoms, Mars must characterize us in many respects, coming in through its rulership of Scorpio. Mars is important to the fourth creative hierarchy. Well, that's the fourth creative hierarchy, because the fourth creative hierarchy brings relation between higher and lower kingdoms, i.e., between opposites. So it is our task to unite the celestial kingdoms with the lower elemental kingdoms, and to do this in a harmonious manner, because the conflict has raged through us in the first stages of bringing about the engagement between the higher and the lower. We are the battleground. We are the battlefield itself. And I suppose it's not the most comfortable thing, but it does lead to beautiful revelations of harmony and beauty eventually. So we shall then find that Scorpio rules and governs the fourth grade of hierarchy, the human hierarchy, from the angle of the soul, and not from the angle of the lower nature. So we're not talking here about the four as it applies to the lower elemental nature, because we are fourfold in an elemental sense, yes. But our higher nature is also governed by the number four and is closely related to the harmonizing, reason-producing plane of love-wisdom, the Buddhic plane. The final struggle in Scorpio only takes place when the point of balance between soul and body has been reached in Libra, which we will be discussing shortly, and it is in Scorpio that the preponderance of the spiritual energy is imposed upon the lower personal forces. Notice those first-ray implications of imposition. This is involved. First-ray imposition. DK tells us about the importance of the factor of imposition, and that it is a noble thing to impose the will of God upon the lesser energies. So things may be balanced, harmonized, agreeable, with fair sharing between spiritual and personal demands in Libra, but then the spiritual energy must preponderate and be imposed upon the lower personal forces and must become the victor. Against this, the lower personal forces will, of course, rebel. And hence, the incredible struggles that will be involved every time a person cycles into this sign or is born under this sign. So I guess, as human beings, we simply have to be resigned to the idea that our way is dharmically the way of struggle. Until by choosing correctly the method of dispelling Maya, glamour, and illusion, we come into the possibility of harmonizing the higher and the lower forces. And this is not given to us until a very high stage of evolution, really, following the third degree, a degree of this harmonization occurs. And at the time of the fourth degree, a still greater harmonization occurs as the powers of the heart are brought into that particular degree, and the heart connects with the Buddhic plane, whereon the full forces of harmonization as they relate to Scorpio can be released. Scorpio governs, therefore, the initiates. This is the name of our human creative hierarchy, which is the true esoteric name of man. The initiates, the true esoteric name of man. And through its hierarchical planetary ruler, that is Mercury, the sons of mine, the messengers of deity, are revealed. We are messengers of deity. We are messengers conveying the thought, the energy, the intention of the higher hierarchies and lives on the cosmic ethers into the elemental realms of the dense physical body of the planetary and solar logos. So we are meant to be messengers. Interestingly, among the masters, DK himself is often called the messenger. We are sons of mind upon the higher mental plane, but we are messengers of deity from the Buddhic plane, representing the cosmic ethers. And we will find our fulfillment in that way once we have conquered the various forces which inhibit sight and effectiveness. But it is through Mars and the Martian activity that the revelation comes about. This is really maybe a different way of looking at Mars. We fight our way into greater light. We fight our way into greater light. Okay, I'm going to, this is the end of section one in Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 77, and I will continue, and I suppose make this a two-hour program. I'm just getting started again after 6 months, so please bear with me if I seem a little bit slow in my correlations. Perhaps it's better for assimilation that it take place in that way. So we will go on with Section B of Esoteric Astrology 77 in just a moment or so. Test, test. Okay, the microphone is working. So, we're beginning Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 77, Section B. I think I'll confine this to two sections if I can. Sometimes I know I go on for 5 hours, but it may not be the best thing for downloading. So we're discussing Scorpio and its ruler Mars. We are thinking of Mars, first of all, as the ruler of the physical body, but then as the ruler of the entire threefold nature with which a man must contend when he becomes a disciple. The personality itself becomes the dweller on the threshold, his powerful threefold integrated mechanism, summing to the number four. So there is the four of opposition, and there is the four of harmonization. And the man is, in a way, struggling between the two fours. It kind of suggests the number eight, in a way. And the higher of the circles must dominate the lower. Secondly, it tells us here on page 211 that Mars is closely related to sex, which is an aspect of the pairs of opposites, and its effect is also definitely to vitalize the bloodstream. So Mars is related to sex, and also Mars is related to the vitalization of the bloodstream. All of these ideas go together. The stimulation of the blood, especially in relation to sex, and the power of Mars to make the heart pump faster, as is necessary in the various kinds of conflicts undertaken. Mars, in a way, is a representative of the sun through the solar plexus. The sun is the source of pranic vitality, the great vitalizer, and Mars is its agent. It, Mars, purifies and stimulates all aspects and organisms in the body via the bloodstream. So we see the importance of Mars in relation to the sustainment of our vitality. It purifies, it vitalizes, purifies, and stimulates all aspects and organisms in the body. So when we think about the first law of healing, that disease is the result of inhibited soul life, it fails to flow through the aggregate of organisms which constitute any particular entity, we see that Mars is very much involved in promoting this vital flow, and how this ruddy planet is involved with what we call our rude and ruddy health. The Tibetan would like to see a lot more of that kind of health, the natural type of health, natural to, he says, the South Sea Islanders, again express itself through modern man, who has been largely devitalized. This aspect of Mars, related to activity, to exercise, to the powerful use of the various aspects of the body, this has gone on the wane when it comes to many individuals in our Western society. But since this book was written, there has been a regaining of this approach towards health through exercise, which is a very Martian, I would say, approach. Also, Mercury is involved because activity is involved and intelligence is involved. So the power of the blood is related to Mars, and the power of the blood to bring health to the organisms in the body is related to Mars. It will be obvious to you, therefore, how the tests in Scorpio and the activity of Mars are potent to arouse the entire lower nature and bring about its final rebellion and the last stand, so to speak, of the personality against the soul. I think these are really words to contemplate. Potent to arouse the entire lower nature and to bring about the final rebellion or last stand. This idea of a final battle is so very Martian. And in a way, that aspect of Mars simply has to be overcome. The Mercury-Venus soul is that which overcomes this aspect of Mars. And I suppose, despite our best intentions, we have found aspects of our nature, and sometimes our entire integrated self, standing against our higher incentives. The empowered lower nature is a formidable opponent, and the only way we can conquer it, and Vulcan is involved as well in this conquest, is through identifying as the soul and no longer identifying as the personality. So it is Mars who brings the world Arjuna into the active fight. There's oftentimes a hesitation to really fight against what is comfortably expressed in our nature. There are so many instincts and tendencies which we would perhaps like to continue in their original form, but we are aroused in our discipleship nature, as the world Arjuna, to choose sides and to fight on behalf of our higher nature, with which we now identify, against the long familiar nature ruled by the lower aspect of Mars. The whole man is then engaged in the quarrel of the sexes, and the quarrel of the sexes is resolved in its highest aspect through the battle between the highly developed personality or form nature and the soul, which seeks to be the ultimate controlling factor. There is much in the disciple of a Martian nature, but really the entire personality is ruled by Mars, and in this case, Venus-Mercury rules the soul, and Venus must prevail. The disciple has much of Mars in his nature as he undertakes this battle, but increasingly fights with the clarifying intuitive power of Venus-Mercury over the brute force of Mars as it works through the personality, demanding the expression of the instincts and of the lower ego. So we don't win this battle via Mars, per se. Mars brings us into the engagement. And the battle of the sexes, the quarrel of the sexes is undertaken. We're all involved in that. But in a way, it's a higher aspect of the divine feminine, which is to prevail in this aspect of the battle. Later, again, the masculine will assert itself under the aegis of the monad. But for the moment, it is the Venus-Mercury power of the soul, which is to prevail over the quarrelsome Mars. And there's no way we can avoid this battle. We cannot run from it. We sometimes do that in Libra. We wish to preserve the status quo. We wish not to be engaged in unpleasantness. That's a certain tendency, a Venusian tendency in Libra, but it's not the highest tendency. We have to engage in this life or death battle. It's really a battle for our spiritual life. So I don't think there's one among us who does not find himself or herself engaged in this conflict. And it says the whole man is then engaged. And we noticed how Mars, in that sense, rules the entire personality until there really is a completely integrated personality, empowered, capable. This final quarrel of the sexes, or this battle of the sexes, cannot enter its final phase and be resolved definitely in favor of the soul. There may be minor victories here and there, but the major victory, an aspect of the major victory, has to occur at the third initiation, when the ancient domination of the personality is ended. The ancient authority of the personality is ended. The color assigned to Mars is, as you know, red. Red is a color assigned also to the will and to the first ray, the esoteric color, interestingly. So red has some fairly low expressions having to do with the physical body and with the blood appearing on the physical plane, and also with some of the highest aspects of spirit. And it will characterize the solar system to come, the red system, we are told. The color assigned to Mars is, as you know, red, and this is a correspondence to the color of the bloodstream, and hence also the association of Mars with passion, with anger, and the sense of general opposition, you know, fighting against that which would unify, against that which would harmonize. And Mars is initially a divisive force. It fights on behalf of the part at first, rather than the whole. But then, of course, it can be guided by Vulcan, it can be guided by the will, the true spiritual will, and then it becomes instrumental in fighting for a larger unity. When Mars is serving the lower ego, it is indeed divisive. We can see how a Mars and Leo combination could mean that. Mars and Leo, on the other hand, could be extremely heroic on behalf of soul vision and soul identification. So the bloodstream itself is associated with passion and anger. They talk about a person entering that phase when his blood is up, so to speak. And the heart beats faster and the blood circulates and the adrenaline is secreting, and this is the fight stance, fight or flight. But the blood is definitely involved with the general sense of fight. It's hard when the heart is simply pumping in the normal way or even quietly to enter into a battle, to enter into a contest, to be involved in athletics, which always involve some sort of contest with others or with oneself, attempting to achieve one's personal best. So, but at least engagement is brought about. And rather than remain unrelated, various factors which at first cannot be harmonious are at least brought into engagement with each other so that an eventual harmony can be achieved. Mars governs the path towards Venusian unity and harmony and towards the Mercurian reconciliation connected with the Buddhic play. But first, the battle. The sense of duality is extremely powerful in relation to this planet. And I think you see that in many sixth ray people. Mars expressing the sixth ray, they just don't see the other person's point of view. They are entirely identified with their own point of view, and they are willing or even driven to fight until the point of view with which they identify prevails. So, in today's world, it's my religion over your religion. There can be only one true religion, and it must prevail. We've seen this in Christianity during the period of the Crusades. We're seeing this now in relation to Islam. We don't see it so much in relation to Buddhism, which has a stronger mental component, it seems. And maybe, I suppose there are fanatical Hindus, I suppose there are fanatics in all the various religions, especially religion today with its strongly sixth-ray bias, the recrudescing sixth-ray being so prominent before it goes out. So the sense of duality, we see it in political parties, in various ideologies, my ideology over yours, Republicans, Democrats, socialists versus capitalists, you know, only seeing their own point of view. And guided so much by Mars, led into battle with the apparent opposite through Mars and not seeing, as the fourth ray can see, that the two really are one. Two merge with one. Not seeing that yet. The sense of duality is exceedingly powerful. This is what we must overcome. It was so strong in World War I and II, so strong in previous wars, but I think people are becoming tired of the strictly Martian aspect of war. A greater win-win situation has now to prevail in this age in which technology has revealed the one humanity in the one world, where you can be anywhere in the world in less than a day, where you can, that's in person, and where you can project your presence, your voice, your image instantaneously to any part of the world, to anyone. The ancient separative Martian methods no longer seem to apply. So where Mars is found in our horoscope, we may emphasize a certain sense of duality which has to be bridged and overcome and somewhat ameliorated. Let's say has to be civilized, because Mars represents the barbaric forces, which is kind of interesting, kind of the beard-growing forces. The barbarians were called those who sport the beard. And those barbaric tendencies have to be spiritually civilized. Hence, also, the necessity for the entire life of man, for the blood is the life, in this sense, to be swung into the conflict, the entire life of man. This is especially in the Scorpio experience. All aspects have to engage in the battle, and all aspects have to be tested, whether they will go their own way or whether they will serve a higher and more spiritual will, a higher master. When the blood is up, all aspects of the man are swung into the conflict, and the lower personality organizes its forces and directs them in the spirit of opposition against the civilizing forces. So all aspects have to be swung into the conflict, leaving no side of human nature uninvolved. And we can think of this in a simple way. The body is involved, the vitality is involved, the emotions are involved, the mind is involved. The sense of being a unique individual, a lower ego, is involved. And the battle really is on. Before that, there may be minor skirmishes, but this is a decisive battle. I was just studying the Civil War in America, and there were certain battles which were the absolute turning points of the war. We could consider the Battle of Gettysburg to be such a point. There were huge losses on both sides, but basically the South representing the solar plexus and lower centers below the Mason-Dixon line, which represents the diaphragm of the United States. The loss was greater for them, and the war turned at that point. Many were still the bloody battles and huge losses. But after that point, there was an inevitability to the victory of the higher chakras of the United States, and their at least prevailing, their sense of prevailing over the lower chakras. Although you know, if the higher chakras simply dominate the lower, you have all kinds of disease possible. And this is not what was desired, and I don't think it is what happened. So a great rebellion occurs. And it's interesting that the Southern forces had a tremendous elan. They had a dash, they had a panache, they had a Martian heroism, certainly at first. And they were called Rebs, rebels. It was a very strong Martian rebellion against the factor of synthesis. And of course, Lincoln and the North were coming in with industrialization and more the power of Vulcan, the spiritual will. And in a way, a Vulcan dominated Mars, as inevitably it must if things are to go well. One cannot imagine a United States in which slavery persisted beyond those years. It would be a tremendous anachronism. At some point, slavery would have to be defeated, and that was the decisive battle when an avatar of humanity in the form of Abraham Lincoln guided the power of synthesis over the power of secession, the separative aspect of Mars. So anyway, we experience this microcosmically and nationally and macrocosmically. No side of human nature is uninvolved. And the blood mobilizes all aspects of human nature, and they are swung into a focused rebellion against the integrating forces. I think we see this in politics at present, you know, in the battle between of course, there are abuses of capitalism and abuses of socialism. Nothing is perfect, but the Aquarian Age is, I think, an age of enlightened socialism, not the kind of socialism which relegates all members of society to kind of a dull gray sameness, but a socialism which calls forth the talents of all and encourages their expression, and truly socializes man so that all of his contributions are for the welfare of society and the welfare of all that are involved in society. And we have in capitalism kind of a I mean, initiative is tremendously important, and there must be that in the socialistic approach as well. Anything that kills initiative, human initiative, is wrong. But we have kind of the lone wolf attitude. I'll grab all I can, I'll compete, and I will excel at the expense of others. So some of the capitalistic mentality goes along that line. And I think we can clearly see the opposition of Mars to a more Venusian, Jupiterian, Vulcanian, inclusive attitude. Little digression. So, hence again, the need for the disciple to carry his physical nature, his emotional or desire nature, and his mental processes up into heaven. And we're going to learn that Mercury is the heavenly planet in one way. It's one of the heavenly planets. It's a lower octave of the heavenly one, which is Uranus. But all of these processes have to be reoriented towards the higher mind and eventually towards the cosmic ethers, so that all of them become expressions of still higher forces, no longer the expressions merely of the lunar nature and its instincts. This is how the battle is won, and there's a certain updrafting magnetism with Mercury attracting towards the Buddhic plane when all is where all is seen harmoniously related. So this is the battle that all of us human beings are involved in, and every one of us individually. We're involved in one phase or another of the battle, maybe working in one vehicle or another, depending upon our initiatory grade, but eventually we'll be involved in the final battle when the entirety of our nature is rising in rebellion, must be subdued, and eventually carried up into heaven. And our elemental life becomes Devic at that point, and we become free of the elementals and become at last initiates of the fourth degree. Nothing final about that, it's just one more liberating step upon the seemingly endless way. So we're carrying our physical nature, our emotional nature, emotional desire nature, our mental processes up into heaven, or at least subjecting them to heavenly influence so that they are guided by heavenly influences rather than by instinctual egoic forces, lower egoic forces. This takes place as a consequence of overcoming the serpent of evil, the 666 in this sense, which is Mars again. There's your number, 666, the serpent of evil, the form nature with its promptings and demands, its lower separative impulses, promptings and demands. I was interested in how Abraham Lincoln, even at the beginning of the Civil War, asked all to somehow respond deliberately to our better angels, to our better angels, somehow an allusion, I think, to the solar angel. Of course, no one really did. But later, there was a restatement of that idea, and the possibility of responding to the better angels again emerged. So we do have this serpent of evil. This is sin. This is the 666. This is really Mars, the united power of the lower serpent to withstand and oppose and rebel against the civilizing forces of the soul, the spiritually civilizing forces of the soul. So, the overcoming of the serpent of evil by the means of the serpent of wisdom, which is the esoteric name oft given to the soul. Serpent of evil, serpent of wisdom, lesser dragon of wisdom, that's a master. And finally, a true dragon of wisdom, that's a planetary logos. And then a lion of cosmic will. That's the solar logos. Seems that we've transferred then from the serpent into the lion, but the whole serpent mythology is intensely significant. And we have to, the soul itself can appear in serpentine form. And the fiery beings may appear like flame, like undulations, serpent-like. This waving motion, which is at once reminiscent of the sinuosity of the third ray, but also the duality of the second, is found in relation to all serpentine demonstrations. In any case, we have to become the serpent of wisdom. You know, when the serpents were driven out of Ireland by St. Patrick, I don't know if it was such a good thing. I mean, I know the tide was against them and the sixth ray age was coming in, and they represented perhaps in their druidical priesthood more the seventh ray. But now the return of the serpents is occurring. St. Patrick, I guess, wouldn't be happy. All of the celebration of the ancient seventh-ray ritualistic modes have returned to the Celtic areas. And perhaps after the idealism of the sixth-ray has reoriented man, as it has during the last 2,000 years, a better use of the magical serpentine processes will begin to occur. It's so interesting how Christianity is always fighting the serpent without realizing that serpents and dragons can be very wonderful forces of wisdom and higher power. So it's as if to the Christians, all serpents are evil serpents, and St. George has to kill the evil serpent. Well, I guess we all have to kill the evil serpent, or at least take the power of this serpent and lift it up into heaven and commit it to a higher, higher objective. But we need to redeem the image of the serpent, redeem the image of the dragon. That's being done, too, in the films, in the media. A new type of consciousness is coming in with the seventh ray, which is somehow elevating the dragon into a noble creature, and all kinds of lore about the sacrifices of the dragons is emerging. And, of course, the serpent sacrifices of the solar angels, the sacrifice of our planetary logos, the dragon of wisdom, the sacrifice of the masters, the lesser dragons of wisdom. These are emerging obliquely into human consciousness. In connection with the symbolic connection between Mars and the blood, producing the resultant conflict between life and death, for Scorpio is one of the signs of death, it is interesting to note that Christianity is governed by Mars. Well, you know, maybe one wouldn't think that, but it, at first, when we think about the so-called gentle sufferer, Jesus as the gentle sufferer, but, you know, D.K. tells us that Jesus is a militant figure, a great general. After all, he was Joshua, who engineered the Battle of Jericho, who commanded that. Whether or not we agree with the motives of that battle and contemporary battles for the Promised Land, so-called Promised Land, Jesus is a Martian figure. And I guess he met, in a way, a very Martian destiny in the crucifixion, kind of a culmination of his military past. But the Christ is his great ideal, and the second ray, therefore, is his great ideal, whatever this means in terms of his particular ray structure. Seems to have a lot of six and one, but who is to know what the very highest aspect may be? You know, the monadic ray, as I've tried to explain, at least my theory about it, is dual. And one aspect of it can be any one of the seven rays, but the highest aspect of the monadic ray has to be the ray 1, 2, or 3, and is, I think, connected with the logoic plane rather than the monadic plane per se. So who is to know what is the very highest ray of some of these great masters? So we are, you know, trying to emerge out of the militancy of Christianity. I think it is happening, and the more universal religion of love and wisdom that the Christ, the great second ray, master of all masters, will bring, is quite different from this militancy propagated by Paul, a very Martian figure, and Muhammad, apparently a disciple of the Master Jesus, a very Martian figure, born, Alice Bailey says, in the sign Aries. So Mars may have run its course in relation to certain of the contending religions, not quite yet upon the physical plane, but its destiny is to run its course as the sixth ray is withdrawn. About life and death, well, we hope it's not the life of the personality and the death of the soul. It's oftentimes the death of the personality caused by the livingness of the soul, which begins to dominate the ancient lunar Martian tendencies. So it's the death of the form which inhibits the full expression of soul consciousness. That's what this life and death battle is all about. And so often it does involve the spilling of blood. The way of the sixth ray lord is red with blood, and his fellow ray lords ask him why it is so. They call him a beloved enigma. He's a beloved enigma to the other six ray lords. His way is red with blood. And in the wars, so much blood has been spilled for the separative ideals that are nurtured by the sixth ray. So onward, Christian soldiers, you know, raising the cross militantly. This is what Christianity has done, and I wonder now about the karmic result, as now yet another militant religion pursues those who were militant in the past. Well, all this is in the hands of the great Chohan on the sixth ray, Jesus, Master Jesus, and it is for him, aided by those who can aid, to find the way of producing an inclusive idealism which unites the best aspects of the rapidly fading old forms of these militant religions until they morph into a new form, which is much more characterized by the universality, the Aquarian universality of the second ray. One is apt to recognize with ease that the sixth ray, working through Mars, rules Christianity. Well, maybe some of that glamour died out in World Wars I and II. It's interesting in the Civil War how many people were eager to sign up and fight, you know, as if it would all be over in 90 days. That same attitude seemed to persist, even in World War I. There was such a polarization, and as the Tibetan says, great hatred. Less hatred, apparently, in the combating forces of World War II. So they were eager to go out into the field of battle and prove themselves, led on by a certain sense of inevitable victory, almost as if it was a game. In the very first battle of the Civil War, the Battle of Bull Run, the people from Washington, as Washington was quite close to the battlefield, just came out as if for a picnic and to see the battle and see their side win, almost like going to some sort of sports event. And, of course, it was a real rout, turned out to be a rout. The Northern forces lost, and the carriages and wagons that had come out to see their side win became entangled with the retreating soldiers and was a real mess. But there are many high-minded glamours about the glory of war. But then war is hell. It's perhaps a more realistic understanding of the actual battlefield processes. Just read about Stalingrad and you'll see that it is so. So anyway, he says we should recognize with ease that the sixth ray working through Mars rules Christianity. It is a religion of devotion. Okay, the sixth ray of devotion, idealism, fanaticism, undue emphasis of one's own perspective and point of view and beliefs and creeds, of high courage, which is typically Martian, you know, facing all odds for the sake of one's belief, of idealism, the ideal of Jesus in this case, and the triumphant church universal, of the spiritual emphasis upon the individual and his worth and problem. Not so group-oriented, except perhaps the great family of Christ, sometimes emphasized, but the struggles of the individual with sin, with his own lower nature, with the devil prompting him, with the 666 prompting him. Christianity has emphasized this. I think we also have to learn to emphasize the struggles of the group, the worth of the group, the problem of the group, and the personality of the group as it must be overcome courageously for the sake of the higher soul ideal. And sometimes, as with the martyrdom of groups of people, who are resisting enemies, this has been emphasized. But this kind of tremendous intensity of Christianity and of other militant religions, I think they're giving way to a calmer, saner, more unified approach to spirituality and to reuniting with the higher forces. There are still vestiges of this and recrudescences, and they will slowly fade, probably after some climactic revelation of their worthlessness in the present conflict. So this is DK's assessment of Christianity. A religion of devotion, fanaticism, high courage, of idealism, of spiritual emphasis upon the individual and his worth. So in a way, it's not totalitarian there. It is not attempting to regiment all people, although there have been totalitarian applications. But the struggles of the individual are prominent. The problem to be overcome. Conflict with sin, death unto life. All these characteristics are familiar to us in the presentation of Christian theology. I guess we realize, you know, written 80 years ago this was, how much it has faded to a degree. I mean, there are places, let's say in the United States, the heir to the sixth ray, heir to the Piscean civilization, and with a strong emphasis upon the sixth ray through its personality, where this is emphasized, and other places, but we can see it fading out, feel it fading out in the general Aquarianization of approach to the divine. Even with the tremendous uprising of Islam at this point, it is on the sixth ray, primarily, and it too in light of the revelations of the future, will be necessarily transforming, or its old aspects fading out, I suspect. It is, however, preeminently a religion which has waged a cruel and oft illogical war upon sex and its implications. This is not true of some of the other sixth-ray faiths. They perhaps overemphasize and legitimize beyond balance the sexual factor. It is, however, preeminently a religion which has waged a cruel, imposed from above, oft illogical, because it doesn't really make sense if the perpetuation of the race is to go forward, upon sex and its implications. I suppose the idealism which would have one reach heaven at all costs, wars against the binding aspects of sex, and the way in which it attaches one to people, to persons, to family, to the physical plane. In other words, not to heaven. Other groups have carried sex into heaven. None of this seems to be accurate, at least according to the words of the Christ. Because marriage, as we experience it here, is not found in the heaven worlds. So it has emphasized a militant a celibacy, militant where women and their rights and natures are concerned. So there is a kind of a wry comment by the Tibetan talking about these sexual, let's call it here, the sexual license of, sexual license of the male members of these groups, of men in these groups, and the restrictions placed upon women. And we see that today. We do. In various of these six-ray groups. In any case, it's not a balanced approach, by no means. And this imbalance is going to be corrected under the Libran aspect, which is growing so strongly in our planetary chart, the Tibetan tells us, and also which is intimately related to the air sign emerging into prominence, that is, Aquarius. So this wry comment, pointing out something that many male members of these faiths will not acknowledge, that there has been the enforcement of a militant celibacy, but we all know that a number of popes have had many children. And, you know, many priests have their struggles, and as Blavatsky pointed out, infanticide was common in various of the convents, and the remains of these children unwanted are found in the vicinity of the convents. So there's a whole underside to this whole scorpionic issue of sex and religion. So those aspects of Christianity, I think, are now fading out, and thus it must be with all distortions and imbalances in these various militant six-ray religions. It has regarded the sex relation as one of the primary evils in the world. Now there's the illogic of it, you know, and it's really based upon world hatred. Kicking the ball of earth, as the six-ray Lord tends to do. Despising life upon the physical plane. But if life here is part of God's plan, and creation on the physical plane is important, then how can sex be a primary evil? Hence the illogic of that position. It has regarded the sex relation as one of the primary evils in the world and has laid the emphasis upon the inviolable nature of the marriage bond when endorsed by the church. It's a way, I suppose, of especially keeping women in control, under control, and giving the church tremendous authority over the individual promptings which arise in the human nature, whether for good or for ill. Whether these are moral promptings and attractions, or whether they are immoral and based upon instinct rather than upon love, the church still remains preeminent. So the church is always the authority, and interestingly enough, the Catholic Church, the Church of Rome, which became the center, the concentrated power of Christianity, is ruled by the first ray. I'm not sure exactly how that worked in the Byzantine Church, but the first ray and the third ray are respectively the soul and personality rays of the Catholic Church. So the power complex is very strong, keeping people in line and making the church the final authority in all questions of human relation. This has all been the result, says the Tibetan, of the beneficent or the maleficent effect of the impact of sixth ray force upon the form nature. Because in a way, you know, to restrain the strictly physical aspects of sex may not be a bad thing. A higher ideal then would control, and the church would be the center of authority for the expression of that higher ideal. So DK does include the word beneficent, acknowledging that some good things have come of this, but also malefic. Mars is considered one of the malefic planets, along with Saturn, and the sixth ray passes through Mars. And of course, a ray is not strictly of the form. A ray conditions the form and drives it in certain directions and causes various reformations in the world of form. So all during this last 2,000 years, there has been quite an impact of the sixth ray upon the form nature, restraining it in many ways, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but the cruel and illogical restraint, which DK says the Catholic Church was guilty of, was not wise. And the sixth ray oftentimes will express much zeal, but not a great deal of wisdom. Little emphasis has been laid, nevertheless, upon the influence of Mars upon Christianity. I guess in the ideal of the people when considering Christianity, its warlike nature has not been emphasized. Little emphasis has been laid, nevertheless, upon the influence of Mars upon Christianity, making it a definitely militant religion, often cruel and sadistic, as witness the murders and tortures carried out in the name of Christ, who was the outstanding representative of God's love. So here we have the Black Lodge influence, inverting Christ's intentions. That the great representative of God's love should be represented by murdering, torturing religion, at least in its most fanatical, among its most fanatical followers. A huge contradiction there. And unspeakably cruel. The second ray is not capable of that type of cruelty. It is not sadistic. It has a strong power of identification with the other, but the dualism promoted by Mars and the sixth ray make cruelty and sadism possible. One has only to go to the Spanish Inquisition particularly to see this mercilessly at work, carrying out apparently God's will, but really the evil aspect of man projected upon God as if it were God's will, which obviously it was not. Throughout the teaching of Christian theology, the theme of blood runs ceaselessly, and the source of salvation is laid upon the blood relationship, and not upon the life aspect, which the blood veils and symbolizes. So here is a relationship astrologically between Mars and Neptune, Neptune representing the life aspect and the Christ, the true Christ, and Mars representing the blood relationship, the water of life, Neptune in relation to Aquarius, and the blood of life, which is Martian, more related to the Master Jesus, who actually was forced to spill his blood. It was not the Christ in this incarnation, that particular incarnation, whose blood was spilt, but that of the Master Jesus, a more militant figure, taking a high, though relatively lower initiation than the Christ. So the emphasis upon the dead Jesus has to be changed. It is the creed of a crucified and dead Christ which rules Christianity, and not that of the risen Master. I mean, at Easter, his rising is celebrated, but through so much of the remainder of the year, it is the suffering of Jesus, which is emphasized, and consequently the suffering of all followers of Jesus. One of the reasons for this travesty of the truth, goodness, the Tibetan is very direct, isn't he, has been that St. Paul, that great initiate, prior to taking, maybe the great initiate now, I suppose, prior to taking the third initiation, which he did at the time he was functioning as related in the Acts of the Apostles, so we can read there what he wrote during this expression, the Acts of the Apostles, to see what it is to be passing through the third initiation, was potently under Martian influence and was born in Scorpio. He was a Scorpio, under Martian influence, with a very prominent sixth ray, I suppose. Sometimes I've thought that St. Paul was, after all, a sixth ray soul who transferred to being a second ray soul, though his monad was on the fifth and first rays. So he emphasized the Martian approach and not the Neptunian approach. It was a persecutory approach. He was potently under Martian influence and was born in Scorpio. A study of his horoscope, could we but have it, would demonstrate this were you in a position to study, as can we, who are connected with the hierarchy. Well, thus the incentive is held out for all astrologers. Okay, I want to write that. Incentive for all astrologers. It was he who gave the Scorpio Mars slant to the interpretation and exposition of the Christian teaching and deflected its energy into channels of teaching which its founder had never intended. Oh, goodness. Such is often the undesirable effect of the activity of well-meaning disciples upon the work which they undertake to carry on after the originator of some work for the hierarchy passes over to the other side through death or relinquishes his task in order to take up other duties. This is a cautionary note. So, let us be warned. As we, well-meaning, attempt to do the good and may, in fact, deflect the intention of our superior. Well, this will be the end. I'll come back to this just a little bit, but the end of EAA 77. And I suppose we are on page 213. Okay. B. And page 213. So we'll come back to this. We're in an area which has been so prominent in the life of Western man, because the Christian religion has been so dominant in the Western world. And, as I say, other sixth-ray religions, such as Islam, are said to be offshoots of this, so we're looking at one basic expression along the sixth-ray line. But let us close, then, with the sounding of the great invocation. And let's see if we can... Okay, I think that's not so good. This is better. And we'll sound this together. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Oh. 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 Okay, friends, we will continue with Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 78. There have been made, well more than 80 of these one-hour presentations. Some of them have been 2, 3, 4, 5 hours. And hopefully we will be back on track here and making our way through the book, this marvelous book. I'm just giving you my associations as these words impact my consciousness at its present level of unfoldment. And hopefully some of these thoughts will be stimulating to you and will help you weave a sense of greater wholeness when you confront this new astrological presentation. The Mercurian links, hopefully, will be somewhat made and will stimulate links that you will be making and new links that you see. So, we'll come back and we'll come back shortly and continue.